Operation and maintenance on wildlife area lands and access sites. This is a briefing. So, Paul and Cynthia?
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Director, Deputy Director. I'm Cynthia Wilkerson, the Lands Division Manager. And I would feel very compelled to express my appreciation and really just the inspiration that was offered to me by the presentation by the Future Farmers of America for Oregon today. Very, very impressive,
very articulate, and speaks to my heart and where I come from with regards to landscape conservation and bringing in the social and the people dynamic of what we do on the land, and really diving into the heart of the conflicts that are real and learning how to see things from different perspectives, I think, gave me a lot of hope for the future. And that's, I feel like we're doing, we're grappling with all of that as an agency, and we've got the future coming up behind us to help out. That's very inspiring. And really gets into the role and management of public lands, which is what we're going to talk about in terms of the operations and maintenance of our public lands, the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife lands. And I've just been really fortunate this week to have spent 3 days down in the Blue Mountains region, touring three of our units down there and seeing what we do with these places and learning about all the different values that we are working to maintain and manage on them, and then speaking with and meeting, spending time with some local landowners and adjacent landowners and hearing about their issues and thoughts and concerns with how all that happens. So, you know, this is the good work that we're all doing together. But I just wanted to highlight really the diversity that even just in the one Blue Mountains Wildlife Area unit, going from the Wooten unit, which has 11 campgrounds and 8 lakes and tons of people out there fishing, active restoration of the Tucannon River system, just an incredible amount of work there, bighorn sheep population, going from there down to the 4-0 Ranch and seeing, you know, this place with a tremendous amount of history and vast landscapes and splendor and use and the heritage ranch history that's there and is continuing in the agriculture production there. It's just such a diverse and incredible thing, and really happy to be speaking to you today at the request of Commissioner Thornburn about our operations and maintenance, and increasingly continually impressed with what we do with what we have, and knowing that there's so much more that we could do to be of better service to all of you and the people of the state of Washington. So I think with that, we're going to hear from Paul about operations and maintenance and then follow on with the next presentation on our grazing program. So get another good look at what's happening in Lands Division. So we always start off with the question, you know, why do we own and manage lands as a department? Well, of course, it's in service to our mission. So to protect, restore, and enhance fish and wildlife and their habitats, and to provide sustainable fish and wildlife related recreational opportunities. And so those are the reasons that we come to you with new land acquisitions, as we just went through, and those are the purposes for which we manage our lands. And really, it's about... the way I think about it is it's about really weaving the stories of people in place into the grandeur that we have in Washington State, and the shared values of landscape conservation, you know, taking care of our species now into the future, maintaining quality working lands and outdoor recreation and rural economies across that landscape level, and looking at the role of department lands in that bigger complex throughout the state.
Good morning. My name is Paul Damer. I'm the Land Stewardship and Operations Section Manager. I work for Cynthia in the Lands Division. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. You'll see here that we have wildlife areas and water access sites that make up our portfolio of lands. We have nearly 1 million acres of wildlife areas across the state. This map shows you where those are. nearly in every county throughout the state, the majority of that land being in eastern Washington, but a lot of those lands are in western Washington as well. Those lands are managed under 33 different wildlife areas, 215 wildlife area units. We have 690 water access sites that access lakes, rivers, and the salt water as well. So a large portfolio and responsibility of land management. Our wildlife area and water access sites staffing, we have about 77 permanent staff throughout the state managing lands on the ground. We have seasonal staff, a lot of seasonal staff that come in during the summer, spring, summer, and winter to help us out. We have several statewide specialists, including four foresters, a range ecologist, a vegetation restoration ecologist, an archaeologist. We hired our first archaeologist about 2 years ago that helped us pursuing activities on our land and making sure we're managing those cultural resources. Water rights specialist, a weed coordinator, statewide weed coordinator, and two wildlife area planners. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We also have administrative folks in Olympia. I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about just what is happening out there, what those folks on the ground are doing. Weed management is a big part of the activities on our wildlife areas. Spend a lot of time doing that. Habitat restoration and monitoring, which includes citizen science. We've been pulling citizen science and using that opportunity on our lands as well for monitoring. Wildlife area planning, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. We do a lot of coordination with our neighbors, wildlife winter feeding, farming and forestry work. I'll talk about that some more too. Recreation management is a big part of what we do on our lands, part of our mandate. Some of the nuts and bolts of what those land managers do on the ground out there is take care of things, take care of facilities, recreational facilities and other facilities like campsites and boat ramps, toilets and signs, the ADA accessible facilities, equipment and fences, roads and gates. Fences and roads are a big part and a big cost of managing this many acres. We have trails and parking lots. We have to manage lakes and ponds and streams and water levels and water control structures. We have nest boxes. There's all sorts of things. It's very detailed, very complex, and very diverse set of responsibilities to manage these lands. Talking a little bit about our wildlife area planning, we have plans for all of our wildlife areas. We went through a significant planning effort back in 2006. We have updates every 2 years. This is all on our webpage. You can go to our wildlife areas and look at the plans and look at opportunities there. We have created a really new push for wildlife area planning. About 2 years ago, we started to develop new wildlife area plans, more comprehensive plans, making sure we get adequate public involvement and as part of that. And those wildlife area management plans guide all the management activities that occur on the wildlife areas and establish management priorities for 10 years out. The plans ensure that the lands are managed consistently with our mission and strategic plan and the funding sources that help that provided for acquisition of those lands. And the plans are developed with public input and will provide information on what can be found at the wildlife area, what the recreational opportunities are, and how the fish and wildlife and their habitats are protected and conserved. So one of the big reasons we're here today is based on your request to hear about our operation, maintenance, and funding. So I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about that and giving you some examples of what I'm talking about. I've broken it into six pieces. I want to talk first about our base operating budget on our wildlife areas and access sites, then go on and let you know about some of our neat working land partnerships that help us generate revenue on our lands and have a lot of additional values. I want to talk about other revenue that helps us get things done, talk about our capital project funding, talk about other grants and partnerships that help us get operation and maintenance and restoration done on our lands, and then just some of the other division and program efforts that occur on wildlife areas. So this is our base level on the ground budget for wildlife areas. We have about $9 million annually. The majority of that is coming from about three different sources. The state wildlife account, The sale of hunting and fishing licenses is about 38% of that budget. The Pittman-Robertson federal dollars, about 24%, that's the federal excise tax on firearms and ammunition that goes to Fish and Wildlife Services and is redistributed out to the states, is a large portion that we rely on and have for years and years. Mitigation is a big part of our operation and maintenance on our wildlife areas. There's several entities, Bonneville Power Administration being the largest one, that have mitigation responsibility for the loss of fish and wildlife habitat from the Columbia River dams, federal Columbia River dams. And so we are helping them meet their mitigation requirement. They provide operation and maintenance funding for us to manage some of our wildlife areas. There's other local mitigation like Tacoma Power and Douglas County PUD that also have mitigation responsibilities that help us manage and provide O&M funding, and then Discover Pass from the fee for using public lands that was established, I think, in 2012 by the legislature, provides about 4% of our funding on wildlife areas. On water access sites, we have $1.5 million annual budget. The majority of that being in two places, one Discover Pass money, but then even larger Dingell Johnson federal, another excess tax on fishing poles and fishing lures and things like that, and that's redistributed back out to the states as well. And so that's a large part of our operating dollars on our water 690 water access sites around the state. Wildlife account is 16% of that access budget, and this other 2%, which is interagency agreement or other state funds, that's actually a contract we have with the Department of Ecology that provides us funding for a litter control. So we have a lot of litter control issues on our access sites, so we're able to bring in about $100,000 a year currently. It varies a little bit to address that need. Aside from that base level budget, the working land partnerships are a really neat deal for us. They include forestry, farming, and grazing, which provides revenue for our operation and maintenance. But aside from the revenue, there's some real win-wins here for everybody. We have a lot of benefits of these working land relationships, the forest, farming, and grazing. The forestry work helps us restore our forest health for fish and wildlife. It reduces the wildfire risk to local communities. The farming provides food and cover for wildlife and hunting and wildlife viewing opportunities, and I'm going to show you some pictures of these. These activities also help the local communities by providing income to the loggers and the log haulers and the mills and the farmers and the ranchers. So it's good in helping us contribute to those local economies as well as preserving community character on these lands. So now I want to show you some neat examples of our working lands. The Metau Wildlife Area Forest Thinning and Burning Project, this is helping us improve forest health, reducing wildfire risk, and generating revenue. On the left side here, the left picture, this is a forest where fire suppression has been in place for 100 years, and we have an unhealthy forest prone to fire. Dense stands, not a lot of habitat. What we want to do and what we're establishing through our prescribed burning and thinning is what you see on the right side, a more open forest canopy by taking some trees out, doing a prescribed burn to get rid of those fuels, decreasing the wildfire risk. But you have then, of course, communities of grasses and forbs and shrubs that's more consistent with historic conditions and provides food and cover for wildlife. Oops. Another working lands opportunity that we have, here's an example of a farming operation. So we have a lease with a farmer that comes on our Skagit Wildlife Area, and they farm the area. The snow geese come in. They use this area heavily. It's great recreation. It's great watchable wildlife. The other ducks come in, use the area too, provides hunting opportunity, provides revenue for us. It's just a real win-win. And this whole valley is such a neat area, and our lands are a big part of that, where you can go, and I was up there this winter and saw just thousands and thousands of these snow geese. And there's people along the road. They come up, they flock into these local communities, spend money, they watch this wildlife. When I was up there, I saw, you know, hundreds and thousands of swans up there as well. So it's just a great opportunity, win-win for the local community, for us managing our lands, providing additional revenue to do basic O&M on our lands. This is another neat example I wanted to throw in here. This is on our Sunnyside Wildlife Area down in Yakima County. This is where we have another agricultural lease agreement. The farmer grows corn, leaves some standing, but even the residue of the harvest creates a great food for sandhill cranes. And so the sandhill cranes come in, and it's neat to hear them and see them when they're coming in, feeding, and then taking off again. And this supports the local community as well. It supports the crane populations, but it also supports, we heard about it earlier, the Othello Sandhill Crane Festival. It all kind of works together, and it's a real win-win and provides revenue for operation on our lands. I wanted to talk a little bit about some other revenue sources we have, just based on where our lands lie and things happening around us. The Wild Horse Wind Farm just east of Ellensburg, it just so happens that a couple of sections of our lands were in the midst of that, so we have some turbines. The revenue we get from that has allowed us to hire another wildlife area manager. We had a large area under one wildlife area manager. It was too much. This revenue helped us bring on another wildlife area manager several years ago. We have a small number of cell towers on our lands that bring in revenue. We have a small portion of the land in the Gorge Amphitheater area. Just so happens that, I don't know whether it's actually one of the camping area or the parking area, but we have just a small postage stamp piece of land in there, and so we get revenue off of that and put it back on the ground to manage those lands. And then we also have some land up that the Mission Ridge Ski Resort is on, and so that revenue comes in and goes back on the land. I mentioned capital projects funding. This is huge, and this is really important for us to manage all the facilities and infrastructure we have on our wildlife areas. I went back over about three biennia, and what I found was we've been getting about an average of $7 to $13 million per biennium in capital dollars for infrastructure and facilities on our lands. So I just wanted to throw some up here so you get a feel for what type of things I'm talking about. Roads, like I mentioned earlier, is just a huge investment and need for maintenance on our lands. About $2 million in road projects on seven wildlife areas. Almost $3 million in fencing. Again, like I mentioned, fencing is a big part of managing our lands and protecting those lands. $60,000 for a clock and bridge and road repair. $408,000 for toilet replacements on seven of those 690 water access sites. About $500,000 for a boat ramp replacement on Diamond Lake, almost $350,000 for a Chilliwas irrigation system. We have a lot of, for our agricultural lands, irrigation systems that we need to maintain. Some of the agricultural revenues go toward those systems so that we can provide that food for wildlife. Cherry Valley Fish Passage, so we need to take care of our culverts and fish passage infrastructure on our lands. Almost $2 million for Beebe Springs Trail and Infrastructure Development just outside of Chelan along the Columbia River, where we have some salmon restoration work that happened there, but also some neat watchable wildlife opportunities, a fishing pond, and so it's a neat place to stop by when you're heading north on Alt 97. $1.3 million in road maintenance and abandonment. That's where, by law, RMAP law, or forest and fish law, we need to make sure that we don't have sediment going into the streams from our forest roads, and so there's a cost there to make sure that if that is happening, that we address it right away, and that our culverts under those roads are fish passable. So we have a fair amount of capital dollars that go into that type of activity. I mentioned those 690 water access sites. Each of those sites, or many of those sites, include one or all of the components of a toilet, a parking lot, a boat ramp, maybe a dock on that boat ramp, significant costs to maintain and develop, and so $6.2 million for those projects. $3 million for the Wooten floodplain improvement, looking at improving the riparian area along the Wooten, the Toucannon River in our Wooten Wildlife Area. And then last I threw in here are $800,000 of forest health and thinning prescribed burning dollars came in capital funds this last biennium. That's to look at thinning and burning, and we have a request for more in this legislative session to help us out with the backlog of forest health activities that we really need to be doing on our lands. So just a couple examples of capital projects. Here's one, the Terrell Fishing Pier Development up in Whatcom County, $450,000 for a fishing pier, an ADA restroom, parking, and grading. This is a heavily used area. Every time I've been up there, I've seen several people out on this dock, and it was kind of scary what used to be here, this wood, decrepit thing, and we had to actually close it down until we could get money in the capital budget to replace it with something like this that'll be there forever. We were talking about Reardon and Audubon Lake, and we had a neat project several years ago to develop the viewing blinds that we heard about earlier today. $280,000 from the capital direct appropriation to the agency went into the ADA trails and restrooms and the two parking lots and the two viewing blinds. If I recall, when I was orientation-wise, if you look at that upper right picture, you're looking at the north blind looking south over the wetland, and the town of Reardon is in the background there. So this is a really neat spot, as we've heard, and it was a really success story with all sorts of different funds coming into this. I wanted to also spend a little bit of time talking about grants and partnerships. We have regional fisheries enhancement groups that help us perform in-stream and riparian restoration projects in our wildlife areas. Natural Resource Conservation Service has over the years provided WIP and now EQIP money, which is Environmental Qualities Incentive Program dollars, through the Farm Bill that helps us do conservation on ag fields and forest habitats. We have the Army Compatible Use Buffer, or what's called ACUB, money coming in for prairie restoration, Puget Prairie restoration on our wildlife areas. And then we also have grants. We have really been successful and focused a lot of our attention on looking at trying to get grants to help us do restoration on our wildlife areas and developments as well. So the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program dollars provide state land restoration grants and state land development grants as well. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation provides a lot of grant money for projects on our wildlife areas too. So an example of one of these partnerships is that ACUB money that I mentioned earlier, and it's for those Puget Prairie habitats that are have disappeared. There's a small percentage of them left. They're a high priority for the agency. We have in the past gotten about $400,000 a year to do weed control, prescribed burning and species reintroductions on those lands. So you'll see some burning and weed control going on here, and then the Taylor's Checker Spot Butterfly that uses those prairies. Another example of state land restoration grant dollars that we've gotten is a project on the Sinlehican Wildlife Area Forest Health Restoration Project, where we're doing prescribed burning and forest thinning and ecological integrity monitoring that those funds have allowed us to do, about $850,000. We found that after the 2015 Okanagan Complex fire that it was really rewarding to go out there and see where we had done prescribed burning and we'd done thinning and then prescribed burning, that those forest trees were not burned. So you'll see just across this line here where we lost all the trees when the fire came through. So by getting in there and thinning and doing prescribed burning, it really cuts down on the aggressive, the way that those fires carry. And in the area where we've done that, the fires don't carry up into the canopy, and so really has saved some of the forest habitat up there, and we need to be doing more of that. This is a state land development grant, so it's similar to another project you've seen where it's a fishing float and a boat ramp and a restroom and a kiosk, but I just wanted to show this type of project again to emphasize that we are going after any type of fund source we can get to do these things. So we're, as before I mentioned it, in the context of capital dollars, this is in the context of a grant opportunity, and we've gone out and gotten these grants, and it's a huge component of what we do on our wildlife areas, relying on those grants. I wanted to mention lastly that aside from all the dollars that the Lands Division is pulling and putting out on the ground, there's a lot of other efforts that staff are doing on the wildlife areas, either through different programs or different divisions, including biologists out there working on the clock of milk herd study. We have pheasant release programs on our wildlife areas, sharptail and sage-grouse reintroductions on our wildlife areas where our wildlife area staff are helping, but there's other district biologists leading the work there. We have wildlife winter feeding. Of course, law enforcement enforcing our rules out in the wildlife areas is important, and then we have outreach and education efforts on the wildlife areas. Wanted to give you just cover a slide here on what type of recreational opportunities are out there, and right up front I'll say, you know, it's so open. People go out, and as long as they're not damaging the habitat, we're providing this diverse recreation on our wildlife areas. So hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing are a high priority based on our mission. But we have, and a lot of our recreation is dispersed recreation, but it's very diverse. Anything from camping, hiking, biking, cross-country skiing, swimming, geocaching is becoming popular. Climbing and even hang gliding we have occurring on our wildlife areas. So it's a really diverse set of different activities that are occurring out there. We have commercial use opportunities on our wildlife areas, rafting, mountain biking events. So that's where if there's a company, for example, that wants to use our water access sites to take their clients out and drop them off onto the river and then pick them up on another access site, they come to us, they look for a commercial use permit to provide that recreation, where we look at it, evaluate it. If it's consistent, isn't going to damage the environment, we provide those permits. Wanted to talk just a little bit about the public use rules on our lands. Back in 2007, we established public use rules to address aircraft, all these different topics. The aircraft WAC essentially just says you can't land a plane on a wildlife area without a permit. But there's behavior and conduct rules that talk about following the signage and disorderly conduct. Camping rules that really just focus in on how long you can camp on a wildlife area so that we make sure we're providing enough opportunity for many different folks rather than one person staying there for the whole summer. We have fires and campfire rules, basically no fires on wildlife areas. And if you have a campfire, keeping it not too large, not larger than a 3-foot by 3-foot footprint to address the fire risk. No fireworks are allowed in our wildlife areas. No littering. Enforcement, of course, is important on our wildlife areas, and the WAC basically gives the authority to our enforcement officers to remove individuals that aren't following the regulations. We have regulations around camps, blinds, and tree stands that basically say remove them when you're done. Don't nail a tree stand into the tree. You don't want to hurt the trees. No digging pits. When you're thinking about blinds, we have cultural resource protection rules that we have to follow. And if you put a blind up and you're not there, it's first come, first serve, so other people can use your blind. We don't want to be exclusive. Regulating public access, WAC specifically says we can limit access to a wildlife area. Typically, it's based on safety issues. If there's a fire out there, we'll have some rules that restrict access so we can manage that. Parking, WAC just mainly speaks to, again, how long you can park in an area. 21 days, you have to move your car after that. Pets should be not be unattended. Pets should be on leashes between April 1st and July 31st to protect nesting birds. They should always be on leash near designated campgrounds and at water access sites. And then firearms and target practicing rules essentially focus on that there's no use of tracers or incendiary ammunition to decrease the fire risk. No shooting within 500 feet of a camp designated campground or and to make sure folks remove their debris after target practice. And lastly, I want you to know that we are looking forward. To enhance what we're doing out there, We're looking forward. We're looking at developing a recreational strategy, looking at comprehensively, looking statewide at having consistent process to assess compatible recreational activities on our lands and look for recreational opportunities. So we'll be entering into a process probably after the legislative session ends and coming up with a more focused recreation strategy on our lands. We want to enhance awareness and engagement efforts associated with our lands. And so with that recreation strategy, we are establishing a recreation steering committee to help us through that process. We have wildlife area advisory groups to help us with our wildlife area planning on all our wildlife areas, and we have a neat website. It's a real advancement from where we were 7-8 years ago, but we're looking at that as well to see if we can enhance that. But I wouldn't hesitate to go on it now because you can find our wildlife area plans. You can look at each wildlife area, see what the opportunities are there, see some neat pictures. You can look at all of our water access sites too and find out some information about whether it has a toilet, whether it has a boat ramp or not. So our website is worth going to if you haven't. We want to move on innovative stewardship approaches. We want to keep thinking out of the box so we can do a better job. One of those things that I think about is enhancing our ecological integrity monitoring and how we can use citizen science in that ecological integrity monitoring, because we just don't have enough bodies out there. So if we can engage the public to help us do that, we get more people involved with our land management, and we get monitoring data out of that that then we can use for adaptively managing our lands into the future. We want our lands to be a showcase for conservation and restoration. We want to be able to point to what we're doing on our lands, how it's working, when it's not working, how we can fix it so that others can learn from that. And lastly, we want to really have relevant connections to local communities and values. It's part of our strategic plan. I talked a little bit earlier about working land, so that's a way that we can engage and have local cooperation on our lands. We work with counties on our weed control efforts, so we're working together to focus on weed problems where we can, and we do outreach and education. So we want to look at these things, look at improving them in the future. And I think that's my last slide. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Paul and Cindy. Any questions from the commission? Good briefing.
First of all, I want to thank Cynthia and Steve for coming down, because the former director, Phil Anderson, had heard me voice many of my concerns about the department owning ground. And he got a project started where we have a local group. And we are dealing with a lot of this and crunching a lot of numbers. And Director Unsworth has kept it going, and Steve's been a big player in it. So first of all, I do want to thank it, because this gives us an opportunity in a county where the department owns a little over 15% of our ground. And it's had a very devastating effect upon our county. And at the time that we got this started, there was 4 more large ranches in play. And once the dollars and figures started coming out, we basically put the skids to those 4 other acquisitions. So hopefully we're in a holding pattern about the department owning ground in our county, or buying more ground in our county. Steve and a bunch of his people put some numbers together, because we were asking, okay, what's the dollar impact? What is your O&M money? What do you expend in Assotin County? And they came up, and I'm using rough numbers, Steve, but it was basically $450,000, right?
That was the salary component.
Yeah. That was around $450,000, and there again, there was like $40,000 was spent locally for whatever, spray, this, that, and the other. We had one guy in the audience that is a numbers cruncher. He farms a lot of dirt, so he has to be a numbers cruncher. And dirty quick, not right to the dollar and right to the cent, but using Brits, production costs, that same ground, if it were in agriculture, we'd have been looking between $5 and $6 million is the economic impact on that. And we always talk about the PILT payments and the department, and there again, it isn't the department's fault, it's the legislator's fault that the PILT payments are as far behind as they are. But in a small county, it has a effect, a major effect. And then when you really get into the nuts and bolts of how farmers and ranchers are taxed, the vast majority of our taxes that we pay are on our developments, our houses, our barns, our shops, and personal property. That's the equipment that we own and run. When we were doing these numbers in Soton County, everybody sat down and come in, and they brought their tax sheets in and their acreage, and they go, okay, here's what it would figure if I were to sell my place to the department and what they would pay. And here's what I actually pay. I don't have a lot of machinery. All I do is hay and then have some logging equipment. So I was one of the lower ones. And same deal. If I were to sell my ground to the department, I would literally be paying four times more than what the department would if they were paying their full PILT payment taxes, which they are not. We had guys that were eight times the amount because they had a lot of farming equipment and that kind of stuff. So I guess I'm just trying to say the other side of the coin. Some of these land acquisitions that you guys approved, I didn't vote for it, but where they're the small recreational things, 4, 5, 10 acres where you can access a lake or a river or something like that, I couldn't agree more with. But every time we start looking at these large acquisitions, I just cringe, because I do. And there again, I see Don DeShiel back there. He might even want to weigh in on this, but these rural communities that are struggling with large, vast areas to cover for roads and fires and this kind of stuff, and then we just come in and cut their wheels out from underneath them, it does have an effect. So I guess I just wanted to point out the other side to this, that yeah, progress has been made, or if you want a progress, I don't really call it progress, but you need to keep this in the back of your mind, what you are actually doing to some of these small rural counties, that it does have a profound effect upon them, let alone these young people right here coming back. I'll assure you, agriculture sucks right at the moment. There's nothing bright about it. Wheat farmers, I don't even know how they're doing it. Because with their production costs and the price of wheat, it's a loser. It's just figure out how you can lose the least. Cattle operations, I'm less than half on my steers what I was selling for 2 years ago. It's at a break-even point. And so trying to buy more ground is tough at very best, and we just can't compete with the department when it comes to buying ground, and that's all it is. And we're stealing these kids' future from them is what we're doing in these rural counties. And that's the part that upsets me as much as anything, because for a young person to get into agriculture, you got to catch a break. That's all it comes down to. You either got to be born into it or go someplace and make multi-millions and come back, or have somebody that's going to give you a leg up on the deal, because just to walk in and buy a chunk of dirt, you can't make it work. So, like I said, I know the ball's rolling and everything's going good. We need to protect wildlife. We need to protect habitat and that. But it truly does have a downside in these rural counties. So, thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay, well, thank you, Cynthia, and thank you, Paul. And